news of the church, and comment. Temples dedicated in Alberta and North Carolina. Edmonton, Alberta Temple. Canada's fifth and the church's 67th operating temple was dedicated by President Gordon B. Hinckley in seven sessions held the 11th and 12th of December. Let thy providence be felt in this great nation of Canada, that it shall continue to be a land where thy sons and daughters enjoy the precious boon of freedom of assembly and worship, said President Hinckley in his dedicatory prayer. Bless those who govern, that they shall look with favor upon thy people, and may thy work grow in numbers, in majesty, and in strength in this good land. Also in attendance at the dedication were Elder Neil A. Maxwell of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, Elder Hugh W. Pinnock of the 70, President of the North America Central Area, and Elder Blair S. Bennett, an Area Authority 70. About 27,000 people attended the new temple's public open house. With two ordinance rooms and two sealing rooms, the Edmonton Alberta Temple serves about 14,800 members living in five stakes in Red Deer, Grand Prairie, and Edmonton. The temple is open for six sessions on Tuesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, and three sessions on Wednesdays and Thursdays. To have a temple located here is going to bless lives in ways we really don't even understand yet, said Elder Bennett. This has literally been a fulfillment of the hopes and dreams and aspirations of a generation that has lived and served in Edmonton. Quoting Doctrine and Covenants, section 109, verse 22, in his dedicatory prayer, President Hinckley said, May thy servants go forth from this house armed with thy power, and that thy name may be upon them, and thy glory be round about them, and thine angels have charge over them. Raleigh, North Carolina Temple. We are partakers of those wondrous blessings promised in words of revelation, said President Hinckley in his dedicatory prayer for the Raleigh, North Carolina Temple. Thou hast said, For I deign to reveal unto my church things which have been kept hid from before the foundation of the world, things that pertain to the dispensation of the fullness of times. Doctrine and Covenants, section 124, verse 41. Participating in the seven dedicatory sessions held the 18th and 19th of December were Elder M. Russell Ballard of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles and Elder Lauren C. Dunn of the 70, President of the North America East Area. Prior to the dedication, about 31,000 people attended the public open house. Located in the suburb of Apex, about 10 miles southwest of metropolitan Raleigh, the new temple serves about 27,600 members in eight North Carolina stakes: Winston-Salem, Durham, Greensboro, Raleigh, Goldsboro, Kinston, Fayetteville, and Wilmington. The temple is open for two daily sessions, Tuesdays through Thursdays, three on Fridays, and five on Saturdays. An adjacent meeting house is expected to be built in the future on the temple's 12.5-acre site. Speaking to reporters outside the temple before the first dedicatory session, Elder Ballard described how the church shares goals with other religions, such as safeguarding values, family fidelity, and the responsibility of parents for their children, teaching them correct principles, guiding, loving, and showing the way, not letting them get gobbled up by the ravages of the world. In the dedicatory prayer, President Hinckley said, We pray for all who enter thy house, that they may be pure and clean in heart and hand. May they here feel thy power and feel constrained to acknowledge that thou hast sanctified it and that this is thy house, a place of holiness. Doctrine and Covenants, section 109, verse 13. President Hinckley gives Christmas Eve interview. During December 1999, President Gordon B. Hinckley participated in a television interview on Christmas Eve, joined in commemorating Sunday school with a time capsule, and toured the church's new dairy plant. Larry King Live Interview. During an interview on CNN, talk show host Larry King televised live on Christmas Eve from the Tabernacle on Temple Square. President Hinckley made a plea to people to stand up, to declare the return of values, to be honest, to be upright, to be men and women with integrity, to be men and women who have faith, who pray, who return to the virtues that made America great. He continued, Let it become contagious. Let virtue move across the country, the nation, and the world. When asked about relations among different religions, President Hinckley said, We have differences, of course we do. But there's a greater spirit of tolerance, I think, a great spirit of acceptance of other religions. When asked how church members have forgiven past persecutions, President Hinckley responded, "It comes of the gospel. You put your faith in the Lord. It casts your burden on Him. You're not likely to forgive unless you have that godly feeling." Speaking of today's troubled youth, President Hinckley observed that many have found the way and are living the teachings which are guiding their lives and are making of themselves valued and productive citizens of society. Also participating in the hour-long program were the Reverend Robert Schuller, who spoke via satellite from near the birthplace of the Savior in Bethlehem, Israel, and South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who spoke from the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. President Hinckley had previously participated in an hour-long interview about the church on Larry King Live in September 1998. Sunday School Time Capsule. It is to me a miracle that every Sunday throughout the entire world, the Sunday schools of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints meet together and study the same lessons in their respective age groups, said President Hinckley, during a ceremony held on the 8th of December 1999 to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the founding of Sunday School. All of this has a tremendous binding effect on the Church. In these teachings is the glue which holds the church together and becomes the basis for our individual testimonies. In continuation of the Sunday School's tradition of preparing a time capsule every 50 years, a new time capsule was filled with mementos and artifacts during the ceremony and sealed to be opened in the year 2049. Also participating in the commemoration were President Thomas S. Monson, First Counselor in the First Presidency, President James E. Faust, Second Counselor in the First Presidency, Elders Russell M. Nelson and Dallin H. Oaks of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, and Elder Harold G. Hillam of the Presidency of the 70, who serves as Sunday School General President. Earlier in 1999, a Sunday School time capsule was opened that had been sealed in 1949. Formed from titanium in the shape of the world, the 1999 time capsule contains a piece of the Berlin Wall, blueprints for the reconstruction of the Nauvoo, Illinois Temple, a silver-plated trowel used in the cornerstone ceremony of the Billings, Montana Temple, a chip of granite broken off a not-yet-completed conference center by a tornado, a laptop computer loaded with images and texts, and other documents, artifacts, and mementos from all over the world. May this great organization continue as a force for good, and may it touch the lives of uncounted millions who will come into the church prior to the opening of this time capsule, wrote President Hinckley in a letter sealed in the 1999 time capsule. Dairy Plant Tour. On December the 1st, 1999, members of the First Presidency, Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, Presiding Bishopric, Presidency of the 70, and Relief Society General Presidency toured the church's new dairy plant at Welfare Square in Salt Lake City. Together, those leaders comprised the church's General Welfare Committee. "It's a plant to meet the needs of the hungry and poor whom we are serving," said President Monson, "and it does so efficiently, with the utmost cleanliness and in a spirit of love." President Boyd K. Packer, acting president of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, said the plant was clean and well operated. "I like the idea of stakes providing volunteers in the spirit of service." President Hinckley's 1999 Travels. During 1999, President Hinckley spoke at 65 events, including 14 temple dedications, attended by more than 197,000 members in 8 countries. Following are chronological highlights of his visits outside Utah. January, Anchorage, Alaska. March, Colonia Juarez, Mexico. Madrid, Spain. Jerusalem, Israel. April, Rexburg, Idaho. Bogota, Colombia. Santiago, Chile. May, Los Angeles, California. Palmyra, New York. July, Guayaquil, Ecuador. August, Maracaibo, Venezuela. Spokane, Washington. September, Columbus, Ohio. Rexburg, Idaho. October, Washington, D.C., Columbia, South Carolina, Detroit, Michigan, Nauvoo, Illinois. November, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Billings, Montana. December, Edmonton, Alberta, and Raleigh, North Carolina. Appointments. new Tabernacle Choir director. Following the retirement of Gerald Ottley, the First Presidency announced the appointment of Craig D. Jessup as music director of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Brother Jessup had been serving as associate director of the choir since 1995. Together with associate directors Mac Wilberg and Barlow Bradford, Brother Jessup is also responsible for the Temple Square Chorale, which is the training choir for the Tabernacle Choir and for the recently organized orchestra at Temple Square. Prior to joining the Tabernacle Choir, Brother Jessup was a lieutenant colonel in the United States Air Force. His assignments included serving as director of the Singing Sergeants in Washington, D.C., conductor of the Air Force Band in Europe, and conductor of the Air Combat Command Heartland of American Band. Temple Presidents: Kaland Evan Call of the Prior Lake Ward, Burnsville, Minnesota stake has been called as president of the new St. Paul, Minnesota Temple. His wife, Virgine Michaels Call, will serve as temple matron. Lauren J. Mendenhall of the Welling Ward, McGrath, Alberta stake has been called as president of the new Regina, Saskatchewan Temple. His wife, Mildred Alita Wild Mendenhall, serves as temple matron. Missionary Training Center Presidents: Carlos Morales Bowman of the Midland Second Ward, Midland, Michigan stake has been called as president of the Peru MTC. He is accompanied by his wife, L. Ann Christensen Bowman. David Robert Broadhead of the St. George 22nd Ward, St. George, Utah stake, has been called as president of the Japan MTC. He is accompanied by his wife, Bonnie Ray Carter Broadhead. Jeffrey James Lidicote of the Dancraig Ward, Perth, Australia, Warwick stake, has been called as president of the New Zealand MTC. He is accompanied by his wife, Leslie Mary Dawson Lidicote. Conwell Clayton McCune of the Sunnyside Ward, Portland, Oregon stake, has been called as president of the Chile MTC. He is accompanied by his wife, Marie Torres McCune. Blair D. Pincock of the Sugar City 6th Ward, Sugar City, Idaho stake, has been called as president of the Argentina MTC. He is accompanied by his wife, Noreen Furness Pincock. Harold Wilkin Pratt Jr. of the Tahoma Ward, Tacoma, Washington South stake, has been called as president of the Dominican Republic MTC. He is accompanied by his wife, Constance Decker Pratt. Hugo Nestor Savoli of the Sinceros First Ward, Buenos Aires, Argentina West stake, has been called as president of the Guatemala MTC. He is accompanied by his wife, Miriam Edmi Pellegrini Savoli. Venezuela, Land of Grace, by Alejandro Portel Campos. The land of Venezuela, located at the northern tip of South America, was dubbed Land of Grace by Christopher Columbus. With a climate that ranges from Amazon rainforest to high mountain peaks to balmy beaches, Venezuela is indeed a land of beauty. Caracas, the capital, is located at 2,700 feet above sea level and is known as the City of Eternal Spring because of its nearly constant 70-degree temperatures. It was here in November 1966 that Elder Marion G. Romney of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, 1897 to 1988, dedicated the land for missionary work and organized the first branch with 45 members present. In 1967, newly arrived missionaries found a fruitful vineyard. Typical of those families who accepted the gospel in those early days is the Manuel and Luisa Vargas family. When Manuel and Luisa were married in May 1969, they wanted a lot of children, but were concerned about the influences of the world. 6 months later, missionaries knocked on their door to bring them the glad tidings of the gospel, and in a few weeks, they were baptized. At the time, they were expecting their first child, and when Luis was born, he became the first of a new generation of Venezuelans born and raised in the church. Since then, the Vargas family has had 5 more sons and a daughter. Today, those 6 sons have all served or are planning to serve missions. We are looking forward to sharing the happiness we have found by someday serving a full-time mission ourselves, says Brother Vargas. Another family typical of those raised in the church is that of Jose Luis and Paulo Castellano, who were married in the temple. Both graduated from seminary and institute programs, served missions, then graduated from college. All we are, All we have become, we owe to the teachings of the gospel and our continued study of the Book of Mormon, says Brother Castellano, who today serves as legal advisor to the church in Venezuela in issues related to missionary visas. With the groundbreaking of the Caracas, Venezuela Temple in January 1999, church members feel their prayers have been answered. Situated next to the church offices in Caracas, the temple will bless the lives of many faithful saints who have not previously been able to travel the long distances required for temple attendance. As the church continues to grow, the temple will serve as an anchor for the future. 350 miles west is the city of Maracaibo, known as the land beloved by the sun, possibly because city temperatures hovers in the 90s. There, the church continues to grow, as it is doing throughout all of Venezuela, with three stakes and a mission headquartered in the city. The patriarch of the Maracaibo stake, Brother Eligio Romanquero, has been a stalwart in the church for many years. He and his wife, Marie Antonia, have raised 9 children. 7 have served missions. The entire family is dedicated to working in their family-owned restaurant, which has provided for their family and supported their missionaries. It has not been without a lot of sacrifice, says Brother Quero, yet it has helped our family become more united. We are grateful for the blessings we have received. Note, Alejandro Porto Campos is the former Director of Public Affairs for Venezuela. End of note. Sidebars to the article. Venezuela at a glance. Number of members, 89,000. Stakes, 16. Districts, 12. Missions, 4. Meeting houses, 112. Temples, 1 under construction. Missionary serving from the area, 203. Brief history. Dedicated for preaching of the gospel, 2nd of November, 1966. First branch organized, 2nd of November, 1966. Missionaries first arrived, sent from Costa Rica, 1967. Missions, Venezuela Caracas Mission, 1971. Venezuela Maracaibo Mission, 1979. Venezuela Valencia Mission, 1994. Venezuela Barcelona Mission, 1994. Church Educational System Program established, 1972. First stake organized in Caracas, 1977. Church responds to flood in Venezuela. Storm-caused floods and mudslides in northern Venezuela during December 1999 killed an estimated 30,000 people, including at least one church member. The flooding destroyed or severely damaged the homes of about 50 members. One church meeting house was flooded, and 3 meeting houses were used as shelters. The church humanitarian services responded to what may have been Venezuela's worst natural disaster of the 20th century by sending 225,000 pounds of food, hygiene kits, and medical supplies via truck and plane. A second shipment of 200,000 pounds of food, clothing, shoes, and quilts were sent to Venezuela via rail and boat. LDS Scene, Sports Roundup. The Ricks College men's and women's cross-country teams both won the National Junior College Athletic Association Championship for 1999. For the women, the title is their 5th consecutive championship. For the men, the title is their first since 1986. Coach Doug Stutz, who coaches both teams, was named NJCAA Coach of the Year. After moving up to Division II of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the BYU Hawaii women's softball team won their 9th national championship. The team finished this year with 30 wins and 2 losses. Finishing the 1999 football season with 10 wins and 1 loss, the Ricks College football team placed 2nd in the Western States Football League and was ranked 4th in the National Football Junior College Athletic Association. At the Real Dairy Bowl in Pocatello, Idaho, on the 3rd of December, Ricks College beat Garden City Community College of Kansas 59-26. Finishing with 8 wins and 4 losses, Brigham Young University shared the Mountain West Conference Championship with 2 other teams. The Cougars played in the Motor City Bowl in Detroit, Michigan, on the 27th of December, where they lost 21-3 to 11th-ranked undefeated Marshall University of Huntington, West Virginia. Legacy of the Mormon Pavilion. In the mid-1960s, more than 5 million people visited the Mormon Pavilion at the New York World's Fair. After the exhibit ended, the pavilion's 36 concrete panels, each weighing about 12 tons, were moved to a location in Plainview, New York, to be used in the construction of a stake center. In October 1999, the meeting house was rededicated after a renovation that included replacement of choir seats, pews, windows, the organ, and the lighting system. This magnificent Plainview, New York stake center is a living legacy, said local member William J. Shook, who was baptized after visiting the Mormon Pavilion. It is the tangible embodiment of the pavilion that led thousands of church members to gain their testimonies and membership. Policies and announcements. Council about immigration. The First Presidency sent the following letter, dated the 1st of December, 1999, to priesthood leaders. In our day, the Lord has seen fit to provide the blessings of the gospel, including an increased number of temples in many parts of the world. Therefore, we wish to reiterate the long-standing counsel to members of the church to remain in their homelands rather than immigrate to the United States. Experience has shown that those who relocate to the United States often encounter language, cultural, and economic challenges, resulting in disappointment and personal and family difficulties. As members throughout the world remain in their homelands, working to build a church in their native countries, great blessings will come to them personally and to the church collectively. Stakes and wards throughout the world will be strengthened, making it possible to share the blessings of the gospel with an even greater number of our Heavenly Father's children. We are confident that members of the church throughout the world will be blessed as they heed this counsel and work to strengthen their local church units and communities. New extra-large scriptures available. The First Presidency has announced the availability of a new extra-large triple combination and a new extra-large Bible for people with visual or physical disabilities. The content of the new editions is identical to the other English editions currently available and includes the new maps and color pictures. The extra-large scriptures, which measure 8.5 by 11 inches and have either soft or hard blue covers, may be ordered through church distribution centers. Members with financial hardship may order them at reduced prices through their bishop or branch president. The two new editions replace the extra-large editions of the Book of Mormon, Old Testament, New Testament, Doctrine and Covenants, and Pearl of Great Price that were previously available as four separate volumes. The new volumes are printed on lightweight paper and are thinner than previous editions. Comment: I Saw Another Angel Fly. I enjoyed reading I Saw Another Angel Fly in January 2000 issue concerning the status of the angel Moroni atop our temples that heralds the gospel to all nations. The natural trumpet was a straight metal tube with a flared bell and with or without a mouthpiece. Renaissance trumpets were ceremonial trumpets played with elaborate fanfares using open tones. The modern trumpet has three valves and a cup-shaped mouthpiece that can be taken out. The valves allow a chromatic scale to be played. A bugler can play taps on a bugle without any valves. A bugler can also use a trumpet with three valves. I could not help but recall Joel chapter 2, verse 1, "Blow ye the trumpet in Zion, and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord cometh, for it is nigh at hand." Kenneth Larson, Los Angeles, California. Appreciation for quality. As a retired printer, I have long appreciated the quality of the printing in the Ensign. In the conference issues, I have long thought the photographs being printed in duotone have been especially well done. Whoever does the halftones is definitely a skilled craftsman, and those who do the rest, from paste-up, pre-press, preparation, and the printing, fit that same category. In November 1999 issue is especially good because of the inclusion of some very excellent photographs of interior bits of the tabernacle. All of this is in such great detail that we can also appreciate the skill of those who did the woodwork. We must thank the photographers who had the skills to select the composition and lighting that brought out all of this marvelous detail. West Sebastian, Boise, Idaho. What an 8-year-old taught me. Thank you for including What an 8-year-old taught me in the September 1999 Ensign. Many people do not realize the impact their actions can have on a person. I was much like the boy in this article. I was loud, disruptive, and uncontrollable. Then I had a teacher who cared about me. She had me help with the lessons. She would talk to me as if I were family. At the end of every class, and whenever I saw her outside of the class, she would encourage me to give her a firm missionary handshake. What she did for me has stuck in my mind throughout my life. Elder James Norlam, Tennessee, Knoxville Mission. A Conversation on Spouse Abuse. I am writing in response to A Conversation on Spouse Abuse in the October 1999 issue. It was an excellent article, and I am sure it will help many people recognize the signs of spouse abuse so they can get help. However, there was only one sentence about a husband being a victim. I have a very sweet, shy, kind younger brother. He has been married for the past 10 years. During those years, we, as his extended family, started to see less and less of him, and when we would see him, it seemed his self-esteem was getting lower and lower. He started to get very quiet and seemed to have lost his personality. To make a long story short, my brother has been severely abused physically, mentally, and spiritually by his wife. It has been the most heartbreaking thing our family has been through. I feel frustrated that others do not seem to be educated on the subject of husband abuse. Some tender men who are abused by controlling, manipulating women are truly embarrassed and don't dare come forward. And if they do try to get help, some are laughed at and not taken seriously. Women have a huge support system for abuse, but men have little. Husband abuse may be more common than we know. Name withheld. Thanks for the Ensign. I wanted to write and tell you how much I enjoy the Ensign magazine. I am an adult who lives alone with 2 cats and am the only member of the church in my family. Twice in my adult life, I have had the calling of Ward Magazine representative. I have spent my own money to pay for others to read church magazines as gifts or in other special circumstances. I usually start with reading the back of the Ensign with the shorter articles, working my way through. Thank you for selecting interesting stories of real-life experiences of members from all over the world. Phil King, Tallahassee, Florida. Nourishing the Word. Church magazines help us grow in the gospel as we nourish the Word and strengthen our faith. If ye will nourish the Word, yea, nourish the tree as it begins to grow, by your faith, with great diligence and with patience, looking forward to the fruit thereof, it shall take root, and behold, it shall be a tree springing up unto everlasting life. Alma chapter 32, verse 41. To subscribe to church magazines, please provide the following information and payment to Salt Lake Distribution Center, Church Magazines, Post Office Box 26368, Salt Lake City, Utah 84126-0368. Subscription Helpline 1-800-537-5971. Renewal of your subscription. Ensign, $10 United States per year. New Era, $8 United States per year. Friend, $8 United States per year. Gift subscriptions. Ensign, $10 United States per year. New Era, $8 United States per year. And Friend, $8 United States per year. End of the news of the church and comment.